Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with actor Abdul Khaliq Murtada, otherwise known as A.K. Murtada. And A.K. is here in Sarasota as a guest artist at the Oslo Repertory Theater, appearing as Martin Luther King in the production of All the Way, and as Dr. John Prentice in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, a role made famous by Sidney Poitier in the movie of the same name. When I interviewed A.K., I had not yet seen Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but I had seen All the Way. I knew that he was wonderful in All the Way, and now I have seen Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, and he is wonderful in that. He's a wonderful actor. He had to take a roundabout, haphazard journey to become the man he was clearly meant to be. Listen to this charming man describe the way he arrived at his destiny.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. Being the person who, if your development were not interrupted, if someone or someones did not tell you that something about you was not quite right, that you shouldn't be this, or you shouldn't say that, or you shouldn't think this, or you shouldn't act that way, if that had never happened to you, then how you developed naturally would be who you really were. Unfortunately, as is clear to me as a psychotherapist, many too many of us are told over and over again by many someones, our family of origin, our friends, our peers, the school that we go to, the culture we live in, religious organizations, they all have opinions about what is right and what is wrong and what we should be and what we shouldn't be and how we should act and what we should think. And for some of us, we are not that. We are different from what the someones think we should be. And it's too hard to be different. And so many of us have the capacity to pretend that we are what they seem to want us to be. While that seems to work fairly well in our childhood, but as we get older, we quite often need those things which were natural to us. But we have gotten so good at pretending that we don't have them that we have forgotten, and we no longer seem to have access to things which are natural and essential to our well-being. The Lin Show is about saying, while that may have happened to you, it may not be impossible to recover, to reclaim those aspects of yourself which you had to deny and perhaps now aren't even sure are there. This, of course, is the work of psychotherapy. And if you have questions about how that can work, then you can go up to my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. And up there, there's an email tab. You can click on that and ask me any questions you have. I'll be happy to hear from you and answer your questions. You can get a hold of my book, which is When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can listen to all the shows I've ever done in podcast form and all the interviews I've ever done, including the one I am airing today. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And the interview I'm doing today with AK is a wonderful example of something that happens to a lot of us, and a wonderful example of how one can survive it. What happens to a lot of us, as I have said, is that we are forced to pretend that something about us is not true. In AK's case, he knew quite young that he was a performer at heart, but his early life discouraged him from embracing that. Luckily for him and for us, he was able to reclaim that. And we get the benefit of that in seeing him, as I said, in the run-up at the two shows that he is currently in at the Oslo Repertory Theatre. So this is a really interesting story. He is really a delightful interviewee. I'm going to let AK tell you this story in his own words. So here now is Abdul Khalik Murtala. I am here with Abdul Khalik Murtala.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm glad to know that I am in the presence of such eloquence.
Oh, yeah, right.
Thank you, Lynn.
So do people call you Abdul, or do they call you AK, or do what?
They call me AK, they call me, my mom, my family calls me Khalik.
Khalik, as in?
Khalik.
Khalik. Your second name.
Yes. It's a hyphenated name.
Abdul Khalik.
Yeah, Abdul Khalik. It means servant of the creator. In Arabic, my father. I mean, I'm an American, African American, and my father changed his name when he was 16, and so and he became Muslim when he was 16, and my mother when she was 18, and
before they knew each other, or
before they knew each other.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, that was how they came to know each other.
Yes.
And. You know, there were kids in the community, the Muslim community, the Black Muslim community in D.C. And when I say Black Muslim, I mean I don't mean the Nation of Islam, but you know, they were part of that whole militant. The students that stood in and took over the Howard University, what is it, administration building. They were all a part of that.
Good. So they raised an actor.
And, well, you know what? My father was always an artist. He's a graphic artist. And my mother, being a teacher and a very nurturing person, she saw that I had a penchant for storytelling.
Okay, I want to stop you here because I have a question.
Yes.
I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. That is what I do.
Mm.
And one can assume that you make your living... Mm-hmm. Certainly your life,
yes.
Right? With
yes.
The art of acting, would
yes.
you say?
Yes, yes. Okay. I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
And uh-huh. In the best way, not a lying way. No.
I wouldn't have made that leap.
Good.
You made that one all by yourself.
But yeah,
I'm curious. This is off what I would normally be asking someone, but I just find myself being curious. So they named you Abdul Khalik.
Yes.
But they call you Khalik. So it's servant of the Creator.
Yes.
So does that mean that one of those words means servant and one of the words means Creator?
Creator. Yes.
So is Khalik the Creator?
Yes.
So they're calling you the Creator?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, yeah. Good.
Yeah. They're calling me creative, I suppose.
Yeah.
And you know that for the ultra religious, I guess that would be sacrilege. But
I think it's kind of sweet.
But I think it was a sweet name, and you know, my grandmother used to call me Khalik for the longest time. It's spelled Khalik. But it's funny because there's a Jamaican saying that words sounds have power. So, you know, I believe that any name that you call someone, usually, if that's a name that's constantly said, then people embody that sort of...
Oh, I agree.
They become that in a way.
I only interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
And I really only have one question, and it is, you actually were beginning to speak to it.
Mm.
Do you remember the very first time in your life when acting, storytelling, having people listen to you happened, occurred to you?
Two instances.
Yes.
Two instances. The first one being, my mother used to take us to the Children's Theater in Washington, D.C., which is where I was born and raised, and she also used to take us to the Kennedy Center and to whatever theater, you know, we would get a chance of, whether or not it was street theaters or street performers. She would encourage us, look, see, you know, because, you know, it's culture, and as we know, theater's a reflection of what's going on in the times in some way. So I was at the Kennedy Center with my mother and my brother, my younger brother, Adam, and it was a production of The Ugly Duckling. And it was children's theater, and there was a point in time when the cast, the ensemble, came out into the audience, and they were dancing, and they were grabbing children's hands and pulling them up on stage, and I so badly wanted to go, and, oh, me, please choose me, and the guy was coming up the row, and he was dancing, and I was dancing too, like, okay, let me show how exuberant and how with it I am, and he went straight past me and chose my brother.
Oh, my God.
And my brother did not want to go. And I was like, but I don't want to go. And no, they chose my brother. And I think I was around six, maybe five or six. And he was around four or five at the time. We're a year and a half apart. But anyway, so they took my brother, even though he didn't want to, on stage. And he was just being obstinate, you know. And he went up and he crossed his arms and, yeah, I'm going to do this dance, but I'm not going to, you know.
Yeah, I'm not gonna like
and
it.
I envied him the whole way, and just, I couldn't take my eyes off of him, because even though he was not enjoying it, he stuck out. He shone, at least in my eyes, and I wanted that. I wanted to be up there dancing. I wanted to be having fun. And then when I was in first grade, second grade, my parents divorced and my father moved to a 102-acre place. And I won't even call it a farm, but just 102 acres in West Virginia. And I was going to, I was one of the first black kids to go to this little out-of-the-way school. And there was a Christmas play. And it was called The Imp That Saved Christmas. And we were auditioning in front of the superintendent of schools and the president of our school in the first grade. Or the first and second grade teachers. And they wanted, they were auditioning for this imp. And so everybody who they were picking to come up and be the imp, you know, they were supposed to pull away from Santa. And so I was looking, you know, you know how you'll see someone do something, and you'll say, just, you got to do it like this. You know? And so I was looking, and I was thinking, you got to do it like this. And the superintendent of schools, his last name was Mr. Tremere. I'll never forget it. He said, that kid,
He was watching you.
He said, that kid, that one right there. And it's funny because he could have said the black kid. He could have said something. But he just said, that kid, right there. The little curly-haired boy, that kid. He, can you come up here? What's your name?
Wow.
And so I stepped forward thinking, oh, my gosh, what did I do? And he said, do what you did again. Do it, you know, here. Yeah, you step out of the way. You know. And jerk away from Santa like you did. And they said, no, he's got to be it. And they went to my parents, and they knew that we were Muslim and that we didn't celebrate Christmas. But, and my father, he was like, what is this? No, are you crazy? No. And they said, no, please, he's got to be in the... He's got to be in the Christmas play.
They said, please,
he's got to be in the Christmas play. We need him to be in there. He's perfect.
Oh, my God.
And so they dressed me up. It was kind of like I was a pirate. I just remember having this scarf on and these, you know, the curly-toed elf shoes and bangles and rings and earrings and all sorts of things.
And you wanted it.
And I wanted it. I was, this is fantastic. And I didn't really know what it was like to be on stage yet, you know, and I walked out the opening night, and it was a classroom stage, walked out, and you know, camera flashes everywhere, and I said, wow, this is amazing, this is awesome.
It didn't scare you?
No, I loved it, lapped it up. And yeah, I was hooked.
Yeah,
I was hooked.
Okay, so 7, 8, something like that.
What is that? Second grade, so that's seven.
Yeah,
seven,
yeah.
I think.
Okay,
yeah.
So now, however much you loved it, you certainly weren't saying to yourself, "In this, I'm going to be an actor."
No.
So when is
I wanted to be an architect.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. So how did you know about architecture?
I knew about architecture because of the books that my parents had, and you know, as I said, my father was a graphic designer, so and an avid reader, and my parents were pretty well educated in that, you know, they read a lot, and you know, my mother finished, she's a doctorate, whatever, a lot of books,
right?
A lot of books around the house, and I loved to look at pictures, read whatever I could. I was a voracious reader, and sometimes we would tell stories. I mean, we came from a huge tradition and culture of telling stories. And, you know, when families and friends would get together, that's what it would be.
What kind of stories did your family tell?
Oh, all sorts. Stories of my father growing up, stories of my mother growing up.
So real stories.
Yes.
True, about life. And,
yes.
Right?
And also, too, my mother comes, you know, my grandparents were deaf on her side. And so in the deaf community, too, that just telling the story comes with this dramatization and wonderful expression and seeing that and being a part of that, you know, was something you would just soak up. And so that the black families in DC that I had the chance to grow up around when I was in DC, and also, you know, being in the hills of West Virginia, although I was an outsider, still, I was welcome to and privy to a lot of the stories that were told, you know, in the drug, you know, the convenience stores, or while they were spitting tobacco, and you know, come here, little colored boy, let me tell you.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah,
well, you were not threatening yet.
No.
Right.
Exactly.
Right, and you
know?
Probably were. Charming.
Yeah.
A little charming boy.
Yeah.
Sure you were, actually.
Yeah. I think that was
You were not
the
stupid.
Thing. No.
Right.
As a matter of fact, that was the charm was the thing that I used to get by.
Yes,
the
I'm
charm
sad,
was
yeah.
the thing was.
I wouldn't have known.
Well, thank you, Rose. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, so at some point you think architect. I'm going to be an architect.
Well, because I was thinking that. A, it's art, it's beautiful art, and I was in love with structure, and there was something about it that said, you know, progress and building, and, you know, I just fell in love with the pictures that I would see in Architectural Digest and magazines and...
Well, okay, so like did that. You, so did you... I mean, in elementary school, in middle school, were you in plays or you didn't?
In elementary school, no. I would try to be in anything that was a performance related thing.
So no one
I was around knew the theater. Everyone knew. Sure, you know, you would get communities who put on, you know, so in the Islamic community in D.C., in the black Islamic community in D.C., you know, there would be talent shows. And, you know, you could get on and you could sing a song or you could, you know, you could tell your story that you wrote. And I tried to write stories all the time, but, you know, they would get only halfway finished.
So you did all that stuff?
Yes, yes. So there would be that and then also, too, my mother was a great storyteller to us, and she would read to us constantly before going to bed. So the idea of just, I had a huge imagination, and playing and structuring story, you know, this was before video games were really, really huge and hot. Yes, I'm dating myself, but at the same time, you know, it was when you could still go outside and play pirates or play cowboys and or play, you know, the hunters and whatever. War or...
Well, okay, so when did the idea of architect begin to fade and the idea of actor...
when math became really hard. you have to do this if you want to be an architect. Well, then
I guess.
I don't know if I can do it then. You know, I know I can draw. I know... I thought that's what it took. But, So
when about is this? Is this, high school?
This is junior high.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought sports was going to be a way, but then I was always drawn to film. I was always drawn to movies. I was always drawn to, and that was my escape. You know, I love books and I loved films. I love movies. And so if I ever got a chance to grab up a Stephen King novel, I would grab it and frighten the death out of myself all into the wee hours of the morning, even before going to school, just reading and imagining. And if my father brought home, you know, movies on videotapes, from, it was Errol's at the time, Errol's Video, which eventually became Blockbuster. We were voracious with our appetite for consuming these stories. So, you know, that's what it was.
Well, okay, so at what point?
Yeah, high school. High school is when it really became serious.
So what?
The drama club president, I was part of a what do you call it, you know, like singing group. What do they call them?
Choir?
Like Glee Club.
No.
Oh, yes. Show choir called Harmony. Harmony, Miss Likens was our... you know, instructor, and I found out that I had a little bit of a voice and could sing, and we would perform, and we would put on Broadway tunes.
So you found the drama club in high school.
Yes, right? And I also found that I could do accents. Doing the Cockney was a thing that made people say, "Oh, look at him! Wow, he's a little black boy doing Cockney. Wonderful, you know." So they would have me read, you know, Oliver Twist or some sort of Dickens story at school, and
wow.
I would do it in Cockney. And then I also got into journalism, and that helped with the writing. And I had a great English teacher named Miss Staub, who encouraged me to write poetry, who encouraged me to study Shakespeare. I still remember the first Julius Caesar. The first Shakespeare, Julius Caesar, Mark Antony speech, based on, you know, being in high school.
So you're hanging with the drama club now.
I'm president of the drama club, but it's in, now mind you, my parents were still divorced at this time, so I was back and forth between West Virginia and D.C., still the outsider and looking for any way that I could just to kind of fit in. Charming people was kind of it, putting on this performance, being a class clown,
shameless
now, you know, shameless while in the class,
right.
But
really, you're a survivor.
Yeah.
That is, you had to survive.
Yeah.
So you used what you had, and what you had was very, very good.
Yeah.
Maybe this isn't true, but what I see is that you're need to survive.
Yes.
And your natural talent, that's what you used. And
yes.
And
oh
then
goodness.
You can, and then it served you.
Yes.
Not only because people wanted to have you around, but later it served you because you still have all these skills. You're still using them all.
Oh yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right. So it's almost like you were actor in training in order to do something else. I mean, it wasn't about actor in training, but it served in the long run. I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It totally does. I think being able to relate and being able to listen, pushing myself to be empathic in some way so that I could, not in a devious or in a manipulative sort of way, but no, I want to hear your story because I want you to know that I understand, I can relate to you. You know, yes, I may be of a different skin color. Yes, my parents have brought me up in this religion, but no, we're the same. We're the same.
Yeah.
We're the same. Yes, no, I haven't seen you since I was a, you know, since last year or since it's been months since I've seen you. But I'm still from D.C. I still can relate to you. Let's play this game.
Oh my God,
let's
you're bouncing back
thing.
And forth into
exactly.
these lives. Oh my God.
And so, just trying to connect.
Yeah.
And I think that is what helped me to understand the pleasure of what theater does. It connects people with their stories.
Yeah, well,
connects.
A couple of things that occurred to me.
Yeah.
One of them is you would come to that with a profound desire to impact the audience.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And you would know how to listen on stage to another actor.
Yeah.
So these are all wonderful skills for what you finally wound up doing.
That's interesting because that's the first time I've really ever thought about it like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, I have thought about, you know, being the outsider, but never thought about how that
served
worked
you.
Its well. Yes, served me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I feel like I'm in a therapy session. Thank you. Thank you, Lynn. I appreciate
you're
it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Without a doubt.
It's,
you know,
it's,
yeah.
It's free.
Thank you. Yay.
All right. So, and at what point did you say to yourself, you know, maybe this is a career?
Do
you know?
When, and I wish you know, we all wish we would have started what we love earlier. But I desired it while I was in high school.
Yeah.
When I would see Sidney Poitier, when I would see James Earl Jones, and then when I would see Denzel Washington, and when I would see just all of these
yeah.
wonderful actors, Cicely Tyson, when I would see Robert De Niro, when I would see Al Pacino, when I would see any of them on screen, and I didn't really understand how theater would come back into my life, but I knew I wanted to be on screen. I knew I wanted that light magic, whatever it was that they were doing, and I wasn't brave enough to say I want to be an actor, but I did love how the story would unfold, and so I was pulled into that world. And I saw my cousin doing it once, and said, "Oh, okay."
In a school play or something?
No, I saw him doing it on a PBS. It was Footsteps, some show back in the 70s. Footsteps, what have you. And he, maybe it was early, whatever. But it was, and I saw him, and I remember saying, that is what I want to do. what he's doing right there, acting. And I know that is for sure. That's what it is. But I never admitted it.
No.
So even though I had known it from before and the Kennedy Center thing had happened and had seen performance before and been drawn to it and loved it, I never knew. So high school and college, I thought, okay, well, maybe journalism. Maybe I want to go be a lawyer. I got into the school I wanted to go into, which was Howard University. And
what was your first major?
My first major was English. And because I didn't know, because we're in this kind of capitalistic, this business economy that says, all right, let's push these students through school. I bought into, okay, just get through college
right.
And you'll find whatever it is.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Just you have to get through college.
Right.
And from it's
the idea that college in and of itself has some intrinsic value, never mind that you're supposed to be learning something.
Right.
Right. Right. No.
Or that you are in college, you are becoming part of a network of people.
Yes.
That is there learning, that is there having this experience.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
You're saying, hey, hi,
yeah, right,
what's your
right.
story? What is your this? What is your that? And so at Howard, I got into fashion shows. I would do independent films. I was in a rap group. I was writing. And I remember... in doing these things, saying, yeah, I want to perform. And I called my dad one day and I said, Dad, I really would like to. And I was working for a newsletter, for a corporate newsletter for that would go in service. They would do outreach in the city schools in D.C. And I remember saying, you know, I was writing at the time. I said, Dad, you know, I really love writing and I love acting. I want to go into the theater school. I think I really want to do that. And I want to study acting. He said, no. He said, no, you don't.
Okay.
I said, yes, I do. But I do. No, you misheard me. I do. And he said, no, you don't. What you want to do is you want to go into law, or you want to go into business, or, you know, that's what you want to do. And I said, but Dad, no. He said, listen to me, son. I'm your father. And I'm here to tell you that what you want to do is this. And in his own very aggressive or passive, whatever you want to call it, I guess it's passive aggressive as a dad, I don't know. But in his very stern way.
What he was misguided.
Well, yes.
That's what it was.
You know, yes. And at the time, too, I think if my mother and he would have been together, you know, she would have probably balanced him out and said, hun, he wants to go into
right.
this. At least let him study it, you know. Encourage
so I'm assuming that the reason this is really important is not just because he said it, but because he wouldn't pay for it.
Oh, he wasn't going to pay for it. He wasn't going to support it. He wasn't going
right,
to do
right.
anything having to anything to
do with it.
And in the community at the time, too, which I rebelled very adamantly against, you know, just as a teenager, you know, coming 17, 18, 19-year-old, I'm like, I'm going to drink, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do what I want to do. Oh, horrible. I said, well, you know, I'm not going to tell him I'm in this play. I'm not going to tell him I'm out partying. I'm not going to tell him I'm not going to go to class. And I wound up hurting myself in that trying to. But I still sought the artistic people. I still sought the playwrights. I still sought. I ran into Al Freeman doing a play at Howard University. It was one of his students was directing a play, and they cast me in a play. And after a dress rehearsal, he came up to me, and he said, "Young man, have you studied?" And I said, "No." Thinking, oh my gosh, I'm horrible. He's telling me I need
to get
into a class. And he says, you should. You definitely should. And afterwards, the director came to me. His name was Steven. And Steven says, so what did he say? And I said, he said, I should study. What does that mean? He says, well, it means he
likes you.
He likes you.
Right.
He said, are you
he
sure?
He thinks you have something.
You know, he says, yeah. You should be happy. I said, it doesn't sound like it, you know.
Well, but, I have something to say here.
Hmm.
You said, when you were talking about the rebellion.
Yes.
that you said that it hurt you.
Yes, I wound up hurting myself more than.
I actually don't think so.
Because
I think you would have hurt yourself considerably more if you had buckled down. Buckled under.
Yeah.
I think it's knuckled under.
Knuckled? Well, I tried. I tried because but I did. I failed miserably at the knuckled under.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I think that is that you'd have been miserable for the rest of your life if you had pulled it off.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
So I think all that stuff was your way of saying, I will be me.
Yes.
You know, I can't be the guy you think I should be.
Yes.
I will be me. Never mind, it's not particularly a version of me that I want to be forever. But
right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so apparently you came out of that at some point.
Yes.
So what happened?
I was, you know, counseling kids in
where?
in inner city DC in the projects.
Is this after college?
I wound up going to. And my father, I was on financial aid, but it was going to my father's address, and he was signing the papers. And when he found out that I wasn't, that I was really interested in doing theater, and that I was kind of doing it on the side, he stopped.
He stopped signing the stuff?
Yes, he stopped signing the forms, and they didn't go in. And so, you know, I for a second, you know, we kind of stopped communicating.
I'll bet.
And I was doing a job with a friend of his, you know, counseling inner city youth who were, quote unquote, at risk. And the friend knew that I wanted to act, and he knew that I was really serious about it. And he says, well, you know, why don't you... I've got this project I want to do, and it's, you know, called the Team Troop. And the team was talented, educated, and making it. Team. And that was the program that I was working with. And the troop, he wanted the kids in their after-school program to come, and they would do these poetry, and they would put on performances with anti-drug messages. And he says, I want you to head that up. And so I said, okay, all right.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what I did. And in studying that, my mother at this time was getting her PhD, and I remember calling her, and she said, you know what, you should go back to school. What are you doing? You should go back to school. Please go back to school. And I said, Ma, I don't know. I think I've shot myself in the foot financially. I don't know what to do. She says, well, come. At the time, she says, I'm about to go to Indiana, and I'm going to be accepting a teaching position at Indiana University. You can go here with some tuition remission. Come. And I said, well, I'll tell you, if I come, I'm going to study acting. I'm going to study acting. She said, well, great. Wonderful.
Yay.
Fantastic.
Yay.
And I said, I should have been talking to you all along. But, you know.
How old are you?
At that time, I think I was 22, 3. 22, something
yeah,
like that.
Good, still young.
Yeah, yeah. And so I had auditioned for, I think it was one of the American Academies of Dramatic Arts or American, one of them, or AMDA, in New York. And just kind of pulled together, went to the library, studied to try to, or look through and try to find some audition material. But no one coached me on it because I was afraid to go to people and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about studying acting.
Yeah, right.
Because I thought that, you know, if I did that, people would be like, are you sure? You know, because of what I'd gone through with my father. And so I wound up going to IU, studied under great people, Howard Jensen, Bruce Burgun, incredibly inspiring actors that I worked with, Arian Moyad, who's been nominated for Tony, Happy Anderson, Eric Anderson, some just great classmates who were just doing wonderful work.
And who told you, in even if they didn't say it in words, acting is a legitimate profession. This is a valuable thing to do.
Right.
Right?
Well, I think by that time, having looked into, I knew that acting in the theater could happen and you could make a life at it. But there was a part of me that doubted that I could do it as well as some. I mean, you know, moving like the dancers moved, or singing, you're moving like Gregory Hines, or singing like, you know, whomever. And having a Broadway career, to me, I thought, okay, I gotta have the training somehow, some way, if I wanna even touch that. But I knew for a fact that I could do the on-camera work. I knew that as far as emotionally, I could get to a certain place. I knew that storytelling was a part of it. So I said, okay, maybe, you know, I'll get into the writing part. Maybe I'll get into the on-camera stuff. And I also knew that I had an eye for what the camera does storytelling-wise. So I figured, okay, let me get into it that way. But once I got to Indiana University, and after I had done that play and Al Freeman had seen me, I said, okay, let me try this theater bit as well, because I developed a respect for it, and seeing the performers, woof, I mean, it's just, it was like seeing lights, you know, just seeing lights dance, and, you know, you see the spirit of these people in their reflecting humanity, and you say, my God, I really want to be a part of that. And it's so tangible on stage. Mm-hmm. It's so palpable. And so, yeah, and that's what I said I wanted to do.
So then you studied acting, right?
So I studied acting.
And how long a program was that?
It's a 4-year program because they didn't have a BFA at the time. They had had one, but then they discontinued it. And I think within the last 10 years, they brought it back. But they didn't have a BFA program at the time. And I went in as a bachelor student, and I, at the same time, I was working backstage at the Madam C.J. Walker Theater in Indianapolis, and just learning stagecraft and you know, being a grip sometimes, or working the lighting board Yeah, it was fantastic, quite a learning experience for me, and fascinating to be a part of it and love it and watch the time fly by on a work day and say, wait a minute, I was having a good time.
Yeah.
I was loving this, and that's when I knew. I was like, there's nothing else like this.
So then you got out of school.
So I got out of school, and by this time I had gotten married. The love of my life, who I had known in college while I was at Howard, she knew I was majoring in wine, women, and song while
yes,
I was there.
Sir.
And she was still a great friend. And right before I left to go to Indiana, she and I developed a sweet, quiet romance that none of our friends knew about. And then I left, and she sent me a postcard, just saying, sending you a smile. And by this time I was working, you know, still taking some classes here and there. And we developed a long distance romance, ran up a $2,000 phone bill. You know, cell phones weren't all the rage at this time. Wow. And we have been married for, it'll be 20 years this July. Yeah, she's amazing. But she didn't know I was an actor at the time. So we got married, and it was off and on, you know, because at the time, as I was getting older too, I couldn't go under tuition remission, and so I was working, and I didn't want my mom taking care of my wife for me. I wanted to be responsible. And I also wanted to have a family. So, 2 years in, we had a son and a wonderful baby boy named Noah. And, I wanted to take care of them. So I decided to go ahead. It's funny, Arian, my buddy, was telling me, come on, we got to go to New York. You don't need to go to grad school. Just come to New York and let's do it. Do it. And I was thinking, okay, I got to have something to fall back on. That was always the thing. Fall back on something. And then, you know, that seed of doubt that had been planted.
Yeah.
And so I decided to go ahead and get my MFA and went to University of California in San Diego. Went there and studied some more and got my master's degree. And then from there it was either New York or L.A. and decided to, L.A. won't wait. L.A. will not wait for you.
But New York will always be there.
But New York will always be there. You can come to New York. They respect.
Yes.
They respect actors. They respect.
Yeah. And you don't have to be young.
Theater. And you don't have to be young.
Right.
And so I said, okay, well, let me give
this a shot. Take the shot.
Right. Let me give this a shot. And so I said, you know. And so we set out. And at the same time, I said, okay, well, I want to just go wherever, whoever hires me.
That's right.
And Ben Donenberg at the Los Angeles Shakespeare Center hired me to play Valentine in Two Gentlemen of Verona for one season, and then the next season he hired me to play Demetrius in Midsummer Night's Dream, and he hired my son to play the changeling child. yeah. So, and then that time, in between that time, a commercial here, a booking on a television show here. I said, okay, well, I'm working.
Yeah.
So there's something here.
Right.
And so yeah. And it was good. You know, it was interesting. This is Los Angeles. Okay. Okay. This is Los Angeles. And so, just having the fun of having my family there, and my wife be a willing participant in the craziness that was my life, you know.
Supporting it.
Yes.
Yes. What?
That was more than a willing participant. Definitely. Thank you. Supporting.
Yeah.
Encouraging.
Right.
She says, she maintains to this day, she says, I did not know you wanted to be an actor. I said, no, you saw me. And she says, yes, that was just fashion shows. And yeah. That was, you know, the
right.
Rap scene. And
right.
Sure, you were performing, but I didn't know.
You were going to be an actor.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
So
how did you wind up here?
I wound up here because Michael Edwards has a friend who, well, he was looking for, I guess he was looking for someone to play the role of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and Dr. John Prentice, and he put the word out, and he had a dear friend, Fran Bennett, who was the who's an amazing actor. She's amazing, and she's a wonderful director as well. But recommended me. He wanted her to come and play one of the roles. And she couldn't do it, and he asked her if she knew someone who could fill the role of MLK and the role of John Prentice, and she recommended me. I got a call from my agent, and I said, what do you know of Oslo Repertory Theater? I said, yeah, I know of Oslo, you know. They also have the FSU program there.
Sure.
I said, well, do you know Michael Edwards? And I said, I've heard of him. Well, they're calling, asking, they want you to put yourself on tape. They'd like you, I mean, you don't have to fly in to audition, so feel fortunate. I said, okay, well, great. What do they want me to put on tape? I'll put myself on tape. And I didn't expect to hear anything. I said, well, this will be a wonderful exercise. Martin Luther King, yeah. Never, you know.
And you were wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Oh, you were. You
thank
were
you
wonderful.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Thank you.
You're welcome. I can still see you with your hands in.
Oh, well, thanks. But, you know, and I came home, told my wife, and she said, okay. You know, we think of this icon of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't think of myself playing
Wow.
Martin Luther King at all. Dr. John Prentice, I said, okay,
Yeah, you and Sydney.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, but then even then I was thinking, well, that's an important, how daunting is that? But, you know, so I put myself on tape, and then, which is so later, I got a call. And Shepard, yeah, yes, yes. How long? For, wow. Amazing, of course, I would love to. You know, and it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful, a wonderful experience. To play these guys, to play these men, these humans,
yes,
who have impacted our lives.
And both of these men, yeah, are changing the world, aren't,
yes,
they?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I have one other question.
Sure.
You have given a lot of years, mm-hmm, and a lot of your life to, mm-hmm, this work.
Yes.
What would you say about what that's like?
I would say it requires a lot of faith.
Mm.
You know, I think for anyone who wants to pursue this artistic endeavor, it has to, and it requires discipline. It requires faith. It requires a sense of understanding where it fits into society. Because if you don't understand where it fits into society, then you make it about yourself, and you make it about, oh, me becoming a star, or me being, oh, I have to shine, I have to shine. But if you start to understand, okay, this is how these stories help us to heal. This is how these stories help us to evolve. This is how these stories help us to grow and see each other as human beings and see our humanity that we share. Then you start to realize, okay, I'm fitting into a huge picture here. And yes, any part I can play in that, wonderful, you know. And theater is the most sacred. I think it's one of the most sacred, one of the most underrated, taken for granted disciplines, and most underrated shared disciplines that we all have. Most taken for granted disciplines that we all have, because so many people do it. I mean, we storytell in life, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to say, especially nowadays with, you know, social media and whatnot, to pipe in and say, hey, look, this is my story. This is what I think about that.
Right.
There was one time when da 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 da. And so that actor just horrible.
It's, yeah.
But the conversation that sparks from it, when you look at us as humans, you know, just anthropologically, just culturally, and how our rituals are based around this theatrical, you know, thing, even rites of passage, even going to church, even, or a mosque or a synagogue, or, you know, whatever it is, there is this theatrical, this art of presentation, this art of the story, this, whether some people view them as myth, whether or not the story is from the Torah or from the Quran or from the Bible, they're helping us to understand. This is why this person does this today. This is why this person is like this today. This is why this person holds themselves this way or views the world this way. And so that's what's kept me. That's what's driven me, and that's what I've learned, and that's what that's what keeps me going. That's what.
Yeah, drives. I can't help thinking that all that early life of let me make a connection to you, so I don't feel like an outsider.
Yes.
Is still functioning here.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's one of the ways that things that look like they're going to be problematic or bad for us turn out to be what we needed.
Yeah.
And I know I've seen you on stage, so I know how good you are. I know what
you
give. So, so we're grateful that you are an outsider for someone.
Thank you, Liz. Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see you, and I'm sure everyone else can't either. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
A perfect example of someone who knew who he was at the beginning of his life, who ran into all kinds of obstacles, but somehow never lost the certainty that who he was who he was. And when he was able to reclaim it, he reclaimed it with both arms and has given his life to it. As always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that you didn't know, which you now know. Something which inspired you to look at your life and see, are you being who you really are? Are there things you have always wanted to do, but somehow life interrupted your desire and you haven't been able to risk it? I hope something that you heard will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So